This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. We have one story today. Eric Lunsford is a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's photojournalist and documentarian. Eric travels the world wherever there are Lutherans at work. His most recent journey was to the Middle East, where he visited Lutherans in the nation of Kuwait. The United States has a strong military presence in that country, and the servicemen and women there are ministered to by chaplains serving in the military. Eric spoke to the chaplains, ordinary military personnel, and also saw the sights of the country itself, sampling its food and seeing how Kuwaitis live. Eric shares his latest adventure with us.
And now today's Fast Track.
Here is news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod announces the Stand With Your Community grant program in recognition of the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. A total of $1 million is available for the Synod-wide grant opportunity. A primary focus of the projects funded by these grants is to inspire and empower laity to actively engage in local witness and mercy outreach events and opportunities, this as a reflection of Martin Luther's unrelenting passion for all to know the true gospel. Applications will be accepted August the 1st through November the 16th of this year and will be accepted by email only at eformation@lcms.org. Grant awards will be announced by the end of January 2016.
This is World Lutheran News Digest.
Well, I'm talking to Eric Lunsford, who is once again, as people know, our adventurous and man about the world. Man of the world, I suppose is what we should say. He's a photojournalist for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and he goes wherever the Synod goes. And as you know, the Synod's everywhere. Most recently, in Kuwait.
Indeed. Yes, I was in Kuwait back in late March. I was actually with Chaplain Craig Mueller. He is the director to the Ministry of Armed Forces here at the LCMS in St. Louis. He was doing some endorsing observing work and visiting some of the chaplains serving overseas in Kuwait. So I was really had the privilege of being able to join with him and see firsthand some of the work that our chaplains do overseas.
Now, what exactly is endorsing and observation? What was he doing there? My understanding is that when we do, for example, have a chaplain over there, a Lutheran Missouri Synod chaplain, he has to actually be sponsored and endorsed by the Synod. Is this what he was doing?
Absolutely. You know, and the thing about it is, you know, Chaplain Mueller is just outstanding as a chaplain, not only coming from the armed forces, serving in the Navy, but also working here at the Synod as well. And he, you know, puts those boots on the ground to be able to visit those chaplains. And I know, I think that means a lot to them out in the field to see them coming and to see, your folks coming from the Synod to be able to spend that time. And really sit down and have conversations and observe to see what the daily life is. You know, I mean, these guys work, on the bases and, you know, sometimes they're stuck there. Sometimes they get moved to different spots and, they have quite a life and a daily regimen that they do.
And not only are they ordained, they actually are members of the military. They are professional military people.
Absolutely. You know, one of the chaplains we were talking to is Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Hokana. He's at Camp Arifshon in Kuwait. I mean, he, has been in the Army for a number of years, very senior, outstanding guy, great chaplain. And, that's where they are. They're chaplains, and they're also ordained to be there.
There's actually a Pentagon office of the chaplains. And, of course, within the chaplain corps itself, I believe we have the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force. So the Navy also has jurisdiction over the Marines and over the Coast Guard. In fact, I spoke to a chaplain recently who had actually served in Afghanistan. And had deployed with the troops there to Afghanistan. It was an amazing thing. I mean, how he was sitting there, at a forward base, and sleeping on cots. They had a little chapel that was made of a tent, and he said the soldiers there had donated their own spare time, which is rare in a combat zone, to actually help build a chapel.
Wow, that's an incredible story. And, you know, these men and women put their life on the line, not only the soldiers who are there, but also our chaplains who are there as well. I mean, at the forward operating bases, obviously, they could face some potential conflict or contact. Yeah, and I have nothing but respect and admiration. You know, they proudly serve the country. Chaplains there serve, obviously, you're endorsed and serve the Synod and try to care and nourish those souls who are out there serving. And so nothing but just absolutely respect and admiration for them.
Did you run into some of the troops, some of the enlisted personnel? Did they talk to you about how the chaplains helped them or what they did with them?
Yeah, it was really great being able to visit out at the Army base, one of two, you know, Camp Arifshan, not only to be actually not necessarily embedded, but to spend time with the soldiers. I mean, at lunchtime, you know, there was some visitation time. You know, I can see, you know, they're very happy when the chaplain comes. You know, the chaplain comes sometimes to shoot a breeze of a conversation, sometimes to sit down and have some visitation. And that keeps that conversation going. And you can tell they're grateful to have, you know, the chaplains there. Specifically at Camp Arifshan, I joined Chaplain Hokana as he, you know, visited with some different soldiers of different rank. And, you know, you could tell that they were pleased to see him and to be able to spend a few minutes with him.
And of course, not all the soldiers there are Lutheran. You know, they're always free to visit whatever chaplain they choose. And obviously, the Lutherans get a lot.
Absolutely, you know, and Chaplain Hokana led a service on Sunday morning. You had some folks come into attendance there to be able to hear some hymns and go about with the liturgy. So it's a blessing to be able to see them in that service.
What kind of physical plant do the chaplains have? Do they have permanent structures there? Are they in tents? How is that planned?
Camp Arifshan is set up in kind of these different zones. So we were in the DV, which is Distinguished Visitors, under the general currently, who is in charge of Arifshan as well as the command there. And where we were was near the track and field. So you see these soldiers come out, PT first thing in the morning. You know, our chaplain would be right there kind of warming up, doing some stretches. And then you'd hear the music and everyone would stop and salute toward the flag. And then you would kind of head down, walk on the base. You know, there's almost kind of barracks set up for the soldiers. We stayed in kind of like a big brick rectangular hotel from the outside. Inside where I stayed, there was a long kind of think of a big conference room, fluorescent lights overhead, drop ceiling, very office, but bunks had been set up along the sides and they had curtained off, and there's two bunks and just a very small amount of space, you know, probably less than maybe 10, 15 feet in diameter kind of, two people stayed there. Per bunk. So yeah, top bunk and a lower bunk. And it was just amazing to see the camaraderie, people coming and going. I mean, these are folks doing their daily work.
What about the chapel itself? Do they actually have a fixed chapel, or do they do open-air services? How is that handled?
There is a fixed chapel area. It kind of looks like a warehouse. You know, Camp Arifshan is kind of this collection of buildings. Some are kind of more barracks style. They maybe look kind of half moons, kind of like what you'd see, kind of your thoughts. And what would a barracks look like, you know? The chapel is kind of appears, I think it's like a corrugated aluminum. I'm not sure of the material, but it's kind of a giant, looks almost like a hangar with a little door. You know, not too conspicuous from outside. Could be seen as anything. But inside, you know, you have the... you have this kind of a stage where the altar is, and you've got seats. It would kind of represent where the pews were, and that's where they would gather.
Now, Kuwait is an interesting country. It is obviously it's an Islamic country, and it's bordered by Saudi Arabia to the south and Iraq to the north, and then right across the Gulf, Iran. So these soldiers are in a very precarious position. I mean, because, you know, war could break out at any time there. As indeed we saw back in 1990 when Iraq invaded Kuwait, and then again in 93 where... Or 2003, pardon me, when we responded. How aware are they of the danger? I mean, this is something that I'm sure is just hanging over them all the time. They know at any time they could be hit.
Obviously, there's strong security at an army base. You know, you're going to have your barbed wire and other defenses and things like that. And some of that's not privy for me to know, obviously. But, you know, it seems kind of a comfortable routine there. I think for me as a civilian come in there, you know, there is a strong sense of safety and security. I mean, you see, you're here with the military and with the army, and I think once in a while you might have different branches come through here and there. But yeah, absolutely. You have to remember that you're in the desert here, and there is some rich history behind that. And, you know, that's why I really admire those who are there.
Well, also the fact that it is an Islamic country, it's on the other side of the world. This this, by this I mean the chapel and the chaplain's corps, must be a breath of home for these people, where the country is so alien to them. I mean, it's a desert country. As I mentioned, it's Islamic. And then suddenly there's this bit of home.
You're absolutely right. When you arrive in Kuwait City and you kind of go down to the bazaars and marketplace, you know, it's definitely very evident of the culture around there. You know, you see, obviously, men and women wearing cultural dress. You see that ongoing, the architecture there, very Arabic. You see a lot of mosques. You see a lot of that Islamic presence. You hear the prayer calls. And outside of Kuwait City, you see the Arab Shan kind of mill in the desert, right? And even then, if you were to go a couple hours further, you know, you're going past the desert, which literally is nothing out there except for tents. You have some Bedouins. You've got some Kuwaitis who spend time out there. You'll see camels just walking. They were being shepherded along by a farmer. They're almost heading into a hazy horizon. And you come out to Camp Buring, and which is just located a couple hours outside from Arif Shan, and it's in the middle of nowhere. And that's where they have different helos and things like that that they operate. And you can tell, yes, absolutely, the chaplains, to be able to provide that care, that spiritual care, but also having being there to be a ear. You know, they have men, women, barely out of high school, barely becoming, you know, men and women for that matter. And they're away from home, absolutely.
You know, I've heard the, you know, typical soldier, airman, sailor over there is like between the ages of 18 and 24. So we're talking very, very young people who are experiencing this incredible, I'm going to say adventure, that's really the wrong word for it, but there they are. Probably for the first time in their lives, they're experiencing this, and it has to be both exhilarating and frightening at the same time. And so they're looking, perhaps, for this guidance. What does a chaplain do during the course of his day, you know, over and above conducting religious services? What does he do?
Well, you know, I think, especially in the Army, you're going to start with that PT in the morning, very regimented. Obviously, it's military life. There's a lot of structure involved there. And then they're going to go to work like anyone else. They're going to come in there, and they might do some visitations. They're going to have some meetings. There might be a lot of planning. But once in a while, I mean, they're going to pass through, and they're just going to stop and talk to people, you know. The chaplains I visited, very personable. People want to come up and talk to them. They seem to be very casual with folks, and people are willing to open up and see them. And obviously, there is rank, you know, attached to that. But people also see that cross. They see that cross. They see them being a chaplain, and they know that it's they can talk to them. And so, you know, you're going to see some, you know, very administrative-like work, but you're also going to see that care. And it might be little snippets here and there, or it might be longer parts. But organizationally, you know, administrative work, planning, but care.
One thing I had heard from Chaplain Mueller, who is our, as you mentioned, is the head of the Armed Forces Ministry here with the Synod, is that when a soldier or a sailor serviceman approaches a chaplain and actually goes into a counseling session, what is said there is confidential. Things that this person doesn't want to get back, perhaps, to their sergeant, to their commanding officer. Say a soldier's having a problem with alcohol or a personal problem at home. He can go to this chaplain, and he can get advice and know that it won't go back, won't go any further. That's, it has to be an enormous responsibility for the chaplains.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Being a chaplain has, you know, a lot of responsibility. As you were saying, you know, people come to you and it may not be something they may be able to approach with their commanding officer or someone in a rank above them. So having that ear, I think, is absolutely crucial.
Yeah. And they are protected under federal law. What is said in session is confidential, cannot be violated. So that's ironclad. Was there any interaction between the people on the base and the locals and the Kuwaitis? Did you run into any civilians out there, or is this strictly a military operation?
You have a really great question. We were given a cultural awareness tour, and part of that was down at the Fahil Marketplace and Bazaar, which is a very lively, you know, vendor-driven area. And you're going to see a lot of things, a lot of counterfeit items. You're going to see, you know, a lot of imported items. It's really fascinating. Almost anything you could buy. I mean, you could look and there are walls of counterfeit purses. There are walls of counterfeit electronics. You know, you could find these luxurious brand name watches. They're a counterfeit. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. But really, being able to witness that street scenes, being able to see what's going on there. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the soldiers will go down there to the marketplace. They kind of hang around looking for things. You know, you might see a few kind of look around for jewelry for maybe someone at home. And they'll develop relationships with vendors, you know, come and see. So, you know, getting there is always a struggle. The traffic in Kuwait is very stressful.
Chaotic.
Oh, goodness. We were driving along, and we were coming up a highway ramp. And, of course, people are literally making lanes for themselves. And you'll see, you know, ruts on the side of the road. You'll see folks who have just decided to take their 4x4 big SUV, and they've just driven on the side. We were going up a highway ramp. And, you know, you need to kind of picture somewhere like in the suburban United States. You might have a very large highway ramp that comes up off toward an exit ramp. It may slope upward, and maybe between the highway and the exit ramp, you've got some vegetation. You know, you've got some decorative palms or whatever, right? And you'd see people who had just made their own road almost at a 45-degree angle up the side of the exit ramp, which is not the street. And people are just, okay, we're going to go do that now.
I've heard that about the Middle East. My brother is a he's a retired tech rep. His company sent him all over the world to advise various groups on how to use very sophisticated equipment. And I've heard some tales about how the Middle East definitely follows their own rules, their own sense of what to do. And it's something of a shock for Americans. You know, we will actually get in line. You don't see that in other parts of the world. I remember one time I was at an airport and boarding a bus, and there was this guy behind me. He was obviously a foreigner. He didn't speak any English at all. And he couldn't understand why I got upset because he kept shoving me into the bus. You know, they just don't understand that. What about cultural sensitivity? What did you run into? Were you warned about doing something or advised not to do something? Were you given any tips on how to interact with the Kuwaitis?
I was told that it was illegal to photograph women. And, you know, I wasn't sure how to take that because, A, I always like to verify everything. And I had not been able to ascertain and verify that before leaving. You know, to me, when I'm off work, when I'm just kind of seeing the sights and sounds, I like to take a little camera with me. But I'm always very respectful on the street. You know, I want people to know what I'm doing. You know, obviously, as a documentary photographer, I would want someone to do to me what I would want to do for them, if that makes any sense. You know, I'm not going to be rushing up to grab a picture of somebody. I'm really looking for that slice of life.
Yeah, this is not ambush journalism we're talking about.
Absolutely not. You know, I'm looking for images that may tell a story. You know, and I'll tell you a brief story of one image I was able to make, just a personal photograph. But, you know, I always love these little things. We were walking along and next to the marketplace, and all along there's these shops that sell the white robes that the men wear. You know, and they have the red and white schmogs that they wear. It's a headdress, right, with a leather rope on top. And it's very cultural, and you see men who come in, they look, it's almost like being tailored for a suit. You know, or being fitted for a suit. And I remember very specifically one shop, and there was an older man fitting a very young boy, maybe coming up on 10, 11 perhaps. And he's, I remember measuring his neck. And inside the shop, you see just shelves of these white robes and garments that are worn. Outside, you see the Arabic on the window. It's very scene setting. But you just know this is kind of that cultural, that generational thing, and how this that's passed along. Now, obviously, not all men wear that, you know, and you'll see men and women both in Western wear. So you do see some different cultural, not clashes per se. You just see people doing different things, and so I'm sure in that case it's very unique and interesting.
Did you have an opportunity to sample any of the local food?
Absolutely. You know, one thing I love doing is always kind of getting a sense of the food, and I'd say that I'm adventurous, but not overly adventurous. I'm very always concerned about my health. And it's not that I don't trust a lot of people serving food in the sides of roads, although sometimes it cannot be cooked properly. But, you know, you do have to be careful. But I did try absolutely great shawarma. And shawarma is basically like a wrap that had chicken and some peppers and a sauce on it. Just absolutely delicious. It's garnished with cilantro. That's the thing I love to find about a different culture, is saying, hey, wow, show me this food. This is great. You've got the hummus. It's really incredible. And that is always a treat.
What about the service people? What do they eat in the mess hall? You know, you hear horror stories about MREs, you know, and meals rejected by everyone. The one time I was on an Army base down in Fort Leonard Wood, I remember going into the mess hall there, and the food was surprisingly good. I was very pleasantly shocked.
You know, on Camp Arifshan and Camp Muring, the two Army bases there in Kuwait, the chow, I think they're getting away from that term, but the food was great. You know, think of a cafeteria, you walk in there, and I know, I'm sure probably some of the soldiers may grumble and say, hey, you know, we have that same food kind of, you know, a lot. I think it's great. What was really, I think, surprising for me and delightful was that just because our tummy sometimes can't handle local food, you kind of stray away from fresh food, you know, lettuces, fresh things that you may not sure have been washed in clean water. Well, they're going to the Army bases and seeing a salad bar. I mean, I thought, am I in overseas or am I in the United States? They have excellent food. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things that are boiled, a lot of things very cooked very well. But food was great. You know, sometimes I tend to lose weight on trips where just you may just not have a lot of accessibility to food. You may go long stretches, whatever. Not here. No, not the problem. You eat all you want.
Quite the opposite.
Absolutely. You can eat all you want.
Is this mess hall or is this Olive Garden?
It was outstanding, you know, and I really enjoyed it. And I was very grateful to the Army and generous, and I appreciate their generosity in being able to be there.
And you post your photos on our LCMS website. There's a photo gallery. I believe it's photo.lcms.org.
You're absolutely right. And you'll see wherever I go, I always try to get people to come and visit our site because I really want you to see the work. I mean, the great thing about being a photographer is being able to show you the work. I mean, I get to experience it and say, hey, let me show you something unexpected. Let me make it accessible for you. Let me show you something surprising. And so photo.lcms.org is where you'll find that. If you're not that adventurous, go to lcms.org, click on photo. But you'll see some of that ongoing work, and some of the work is going to be coming up on our next publication. So you'll see some cool things coming down the line there, especially from Tanzania. We've got a big focus in our upcoming Engage magazine. And we'll see a lot more things come down with Ministry of Armed Forces. That's a great ministry that's being done here at the LCMS. So I'm very glad to be a part of that.
I want to reinforce the fact that since I've been working with you and actually seeing the photographs that you've done, I'm a lifelong Lutheran. I had no idea the variety of the efforts that the Synod has put worldwide, everything from medical work to daycare centers for children, disaster relief. We bring in food. We bring in financial aid. We work with the indigenous populations. I know in Indonesia, for example, there was a bit where we're actually working with Muslims on on various relief projects. It's an incredible story. And I've learned a lot by looking at your pictures, things I just didn't know.
Thank you. And I find that even with about 150,000 miles logged last year for the Synod, it's been a real blessing to people to travel those miles and tell those stories. The fascinating thing about that is that that only scratches the surface of the work that the church does. I literally cannot get to the stories that we'd like to get to.
No, and the work is incredible. I mean, everything from delivering tin roofs to a small church in Madagascar to, as you pointed out, doing a damage assessment in Peru. We're everywhere, and we're doing everything.
Yes, indeed, and we're so thankful. I know we're also thankful for God to be able to provide these for us. You know, like to always keep Christ-centered in what we do, and that's, you know, when we go and tell those stories, I think one of the best compliments I can receive from a parishioner, and I always love when someone can pick up a publication and look at it. I listen to this compliment. They say, you know, I didn't know that the church did that. And that's a wonderful compliment because that means we reach them. They see that. They see the work of the church. And that's what I'm here for, to be able to serve the church, tell those stories, make some great photographs, and maybe get a couple good stories on the side.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at KFUO.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@KFUO.org.